It's Essential Pittsburgh. I'm Paul Guggenheimer. The 2014 baseball season officially opens for the Pirates today. And coming off their first winning season in years, hopes are high for the old Buccos. An exhibit of one of the greatest moments in the team's history. In fact, in all of the history of Pittsburgh sports, has just opened at the Senator John Hines History Center. On display are artifacts from Bill Mazeroski's ninth inning home run, which beat the Yankees in Game 7 of the 1960 World Series. Here with a preview of the exhibit is Ann Mataraz, Western Pennsylvania Sports Museum co-director. Ann, welcome back to Essential Pittsburgh.
Hey, thanks for having me.
How exciting is it to have the uniform and bronzed bat that Bill Mazeroski used to hit maybe the most famous home run in baseball history in your museum?
It's so great. It's like you got to make a pilgrimage and worship at the site of great baseball stories, because there's few stories in baseball that are bigger than that moment that he created. But it gets you to a season that sort of reminds you of what we're dealing with now. Coming off a long time in the 50s where they had some really dismal years. And then this season of hope where everything just fell into place for those 60 kind of beat 'em Bucks. And then you had that moment that just we all know is one of the great moments in sports history.
Did that moment redefine or in some ways change Pittsburgh? Because you mentioned the history of the Pirates, and you know who hasn't heard enough of those Joe Garagiola stories of the 52 Pirates, which was the worst team in baseball history, allegedly. And this was before the Steelers won any Super Bowls. Pitt wasn't the dominant team that they had been in college football. So you had all these losing streaks, and then here comes the first guy to hit a home run in the bottom of the ninth to win a World Series in Pittsburgh. What did that do for the city?
I think not only to hit that home run and win that World Series, but it's against the Yankees. Very few sports writers that believe the Pirates are going to win that series. They're outscored hugely by the Yankees. You know, the Yankees have Mantle and Maris and all those greats, all that great history, come into Pittsburgh, and they lose. And the Pirates win. And I think it crystallizes a moment for Pittsburghers of hope. And it's really a period where the city's turning around and kind of reimagining and thinking about who they should be. You know, the Renaissance is just picking up steam. The Civic Arena is being built. We're reimagining downtown, not without, you know, contention and disagreement and conflict. But I think it's that hopeful moment in our history before what comes after. You know, as a historian, we know what happens in the 70s and 80s. But this is a moment where we're on the upswing, and this is a moment where that pride, you know, comes home to us.
So I mentioned some of the particulars of what's in this exhibit, but give us all the details.
So Maz hits the home run. Mm-hmm. He goes into the locker room. There's the celebration, the champagne. He and Mylene, his wife, leave, and they go to Schenley Park. And while all of Pittsburgh is celebrating and dancing in the streets, they kind of sit there quietly and, you know, share that moment together, just the two of them. And then he goes home and he puts this stuff away. And the bat comes out. It's bronzed and it's on display at Cooperstown. But nobody knew for all these years that he had this cache of material until last year when it was announced that this uniform existed and it was going to be auctioned. And it was last fall and brought record amounts, huge amounts of money. And the public's never had the chance really to see this. It's not something that's been out there. It hasn't been on display all over the place, you know, briefly at PNC Park in September before the auction. So here's his uniform, still the little bit of champagne, you know, spots on the front of the uniform, the jersey, the pants, the stirrups, the bat. Here's the stuff that was right there at that moment. So it's really exciting as a, you know, as a historian and an object person to be able to see these things that we didn't know existed.
Now, how did you get a hold of them? Because you mentioned this was sold at auction, and
right.
If I had spent a lot of money to get Bill Mazeroski's uniform from 1960, I might not have wanted to part with it so easily. So how did you get it?
We're really lucky. You know, the collector who bought these, Thomas Tull, is a Californian, but he's also a big Pittsburgh sports fan, and he's a part owner of the Steelers. And our president and CEO, Andy Masick, met him at an event that the Rooneys had at the History Center last year. And when this auction happened and he got these things, we immediately reached out through our contacts at the Steelers to Mr. Tull and said, you know, would you share these with the fans of Pittsburgh at the beginning of baseball season? And he was kind enough to do so. So the Tull family collection, he's in the process, I think, of building a museum in California for his collection. But he comes to Pittsburgh frequently because of his Steelers connection. You know, he filmed The Dark Knight Rises here in Pittsburgh. He's the president of Legendary Entertainment, so he keeps that connection here. And he was kind enough to let us have it for the first month of baseball season. So, you know, luck and connections and the good friends that we have at the Sports Museum have really made this happen.
We're talking with Ann Mataraz, Western Pennsylvania Sports Museum co-director. So it's just for a month that people have to get down
right,
and see this.
Right. They're doing an event in California. They need these items back. So we have some great things that are there for the long term. Dick Groats jersey from that 60 season when he was the National League MVP. The pitching rubber where that ball was thrown from that Bill Mazeroski hit, first base. Those things people can see after this, but only through May 1st will you be able to see these Bill Mazeroski items, and then they're going to go back into a private collection.
Have you seen some of the reaction from people who this has been open for a little bit now? So as people approach these, the holy grail of sports memorabilia, how do they react?
It's funny. Even Dick Groat, I think, was excited. He came and helped us unveil the exhibit. And even he was excited to see his shirt. He's like, how'd you get that? Where'd that come from?
We came to your house and took it out of your closet.
No, that we didn't get it from him. I think fans, when you have the chance to make a connection to a moment that you see over and over and has become essentially iconic, kind of part of the lore of sports, to be right there and sort of witness and connect with that is exciting for fans. So we see the excitement. We see the kind of passion that it reignites and that connection made.
Might you get some current Pirates, do you think, over there? They're just coming back to town, I think, this weekend. So, you might get McCutcheon and Walker and some of those guys over there to take a look.
Oh, we'd love to. There was a great picture of Andrew McCutcheon with that jersey before it went to auction. And seeing sort of that connection between the past and the present, I mean, that's what we're about in a lot of ways, helping people remember the past and see the relevance of it today. It's nice to be able to make those kind of connections for people.
And can you see it inspiring people today in the same way that it did back in 1960?
I think there's something special about that Forbes Field era for people of a certain age, and that team in particular and that moment. That's why people make the pilgrimage back to Forbes Field on October 13th every year and sit there and relive the game, you know, and there's still 50 or 60 and sometimes hundreds, depending on the anniversary of people who do that every year. So I think definitely there's still a core of people for which this is a moment that brings them, you know, it's kind of to a place and a time where people shared something special together.
Ann Mataraz is the co-director of the Western Pennsylvania Sports Museum and was talking to us about the display at the Heinz History Center of artifacts from Game 7 of the 1960 World Series, which, of course, was won by the Pirates. Ann, happy new season to you. Thanks for joining us here on Essential Pittsburgh.
Thanks so much. Go Bucks.
It's Essential Pittsburgh. I'm Paul Guggenheimer. Today is a day that Pirates fans have looked forward to almost since the last out of their game against the Cardinals, in which they were eliminated from postseason contention last year, which was a good year for the Pirates, and now they're set to defend their wild card berth in 2014 as they open the season today at PNC Park against the Chicago Cubs. I'm joined now by our sports guy, Pittsburgh Post-Gazette sports writer emeritus, Bob Dvorak. His video blog is called Sportsnet. And Bob, welcome back to Essential Pittsburgh. Happy opening day.
Great to be here, Paul. Like they say, play ball, not work ball.
Exactly. So the Pirates are coming off of their first winning season in 20 years. As I mentioned, they secured the wild card berth. They won the wild card single game against Cincinnati. in an uproarious situation at PNC Park last October, and now they're back to try to make the postseason again and build on that. What kind of expectations are out there for the Pirates, and can they meet them?
But that's the thing. Success breeds the desire for more success. The expectations certainly are higher. I think to a man, they will say they're glad they don't have to answer the question anymore. Is this the year you stop the record for longest consecutive losing seasons? That monkey is off their back. But now the expectations are, and I think the expectations legitimately are, they want them to see win the whole thing. I think those expectations can be, a little heavy sometimes. That's a burden. I don't know if they're going to win as many games as they did last year, but that doesn't mean they might, won't be in the playoffs, because it all depends on the division.
If they win more than they lose, if they have a second season in which they are over 500, but let's say they don't make the playoffs, is that going to be enough to satisfy the fans, or will there be an outcry?
I don't know. If they suffered through 20 consecutive losing seasons and still showed up at that ballpark, I think there's always going to be a segment of the population that loves baseball so much that they're going to show up. I would expect that based on last year's success, and if they did their jobs right in the offseason, this should be a record year for attendance. They might crack 3 million, because you should be selling tickets during the off season. So,
And that would be a first, too.
Yes.
The Pirates have never, there are teams in the major leagues that have done it, yeah, but the Pirates have never done it. So
never.
This would be a first for this franchise.
Absolutely. And record year was 2001 when they opened PNC Park. And they really could do it this year, so we'll see how that goes. But baseball fans are so fickle, they're never pleased with anything. There's always something to complain about.
Well, you have the ballpark, as you did back in 2001 when the attendance record was set. By the way, how many was that?
2.4 million.
2.4 million. And so now you have the beauty of the ballpark combined with a team that's winning or has won. But they had a rough off season. They did not acquire the kind of talent that was needed to improve the club. In fact, they lost some key players.
Well, yeah, I would think the question mark in anybody's mind, and this is the oldest cliche in baseball, you never have enough pitching, but they did lose A.J. Burnett, who gave them quality starts and some wins. The pitcher they signed, Edison Volquez, frankly hasn't pitched well in spring training and shown the same troubles he's had, which made him a free agent. So Wandy Rodriguez, depending on him, but he had arm problems. So you don't know about the starting rotation. Give that a question mark. They may not be as good.
Plus, they didn't re-sign some key free agents like Marlon Byrd, Justin Morneau. They went elsewhere, took more money. So if the team hasn't improved on paper, is it realistic to expect that they will improve upon their performance last year?
Well, yeah, you say, well, they were younger, and as they get older, they'll improve. Pedro will be better. And
Pedro Alvarez.
And Jordy Mercer will be playing every day at short, so he should hit better than Clint Barmas, who's now a backup. Starling Marte should be more mature. He should be a better player. But you're right. They did not address the weaknesses at first base and right field. And you got to wonder how that's going to play out over the course of the year.
Talking with our sports guy, Bob Dvorak. Now, from a marketing standpoint, the Pirates have maybe more to build on from a business standpoint than they have had in a long, long time. They have bona fide superstars. They have Andrew McCutchen in center field, who's now the reigning National League MVP. They have the manager of the year, Clint Hurdle. So with these types of things to hold out there and lure fans to the ballpark, how do you see the marketing push, and are they doing what they can to maximize on their assets?
I've seen them operate at like Pirate Fest and their ads on TV and, the push to buy your tickets now to get seats for the good games. And, that's what you have to do. Tickets are sold in the off season. Even the successful minor league teams do that. And I would think that this plays right into everybody's fondest wishes, where it was to see a successful baseball team. They had that last year, so now you want to build on that. Like I said, I really expect them to smash their all-time attendance record and possibly hit 3 million.
But their marketing approach, they've changed a couple of things. One is that they are no longer emphasizing the pirate guy, that caricature of the pirate with the do-rag and the facial hair and the earring and all that going on. They've gotten away from that, and they're emphasizing more the old English P for pirates or Pittsburgh on their caps. What do you think of that?
Interesting, isn't it? I have no idea where they're going with that. If your name is Pirates and your logo is a pirate, a corsair, a buccaneer, black sails, all the pirate movies are all the rage. I don't know why you wouldn't take advantage of that. But then again, they didn't ask me last year. They're not going to ask me this year how their marketing could be better.
But what have they done in the past with that? Why get away from the pirate? Isn't the pirate, you know, they have the pirate parrot, that big green fuzzy costumed guy that runs around the stadium. So they play on that pirate theme. I mean, hasn't that worked to their advantage in the past?
You would think so. They're opening video with the opera and the cannons firing. Yeah, that's all part of the thing. But I don't know. Listen, the most successful marketing tool ever is a winning team. If they have a winning team, it doesn't matter what they do with the P, with the pirate, with the corsair, with the flag, the Jolly Roger, whatever they do. If they win, they'll put people in the seats.
Talking with our sports guy, Bob Dvorak. Bob, the offseason brought some sad news with the passing of one of the greatest Pirate players of all time, Ralph Kiner. The Pirates are talking about honoring him this season. How will they do that?
Actually, they're going to wear the number 4, his retired Pirate number, on their jerseys for the season. But it's interesting, Paul, because you have to be a special kind of a person like Ralph Kiner to be honored by a team in that manner, to have a patch worn on the jerseys. But he's being honored by two organizations. The New York Mets, where he was a broadcaster for 50 years, are also going to have Ralph Kiner patch on their jerseys for the whole season. So he's being honored for slugging hits out of the park in Pittsburgh and belting out the hits behind the microphone in Shea Stadium. So good on Ralph. He was truly one of the really good people in baseball. Great player, even greater person. So I say anything that people can do to honor Ralph Kiner is very appropriate.
Did you get to see him growing up? Watching him play?
I remember the stories. The old man would tell them about how people would stay into the eighth, ninth inning, even though the Pirates had a lousy team in those days. People would stay in their seats to see him hit one last time, and as soon as he was done, they would all head for the exits. And in those days, you just crossed the outfield to the exit in right center field, so it was quite a scene. It was funny. But Kiner was the guy that the guys talked about, you know, put one in his wheelhouse. Everybody loves the power hitter. Like Kiner himself said, power hitters drive Cadillacs. It's the singles hitters that are driving Fords and Chevys.
And, of course, Ralph Kiner was the master of the malaprop.
I pay tribute to Ralph in my own small way with Sportsnet today. You know, Ralph actually misidentified himself. His post-game show was Kiner's Corner. He identified himself as Ralph Corner. And, of course, the famous Father's Day call. On Father's Day, we again wish everyone happy birthday. he once called Gary Carter Gary Cooper. You know, it goes on and on. But he was nobody held it against him.
People loved him for that.
The Kinerisms in New York were – that's why you tune into the show. You just never got to see him.
And if you were in Kiner's Corner, if you got to be on TV with Ralph, that was a big, big deal back in the day.
Oh, even their big New York superstars, all those guys would be on the show. The funny one was when Choo Choo Coleman came on and Ralph asked him where he got his – nickname, and Choo-Choo said, I don't know. So Ralph was searching for something to draw him out, and he says, well, what's Mrs. Coleman like? She said, well, she likes me, man. So it was just like one of those. A part of the entertainment was Ralph Kiner.
Last thing I wanted to mention to you was just this, how the success of last season has raised the national profile of the Pirates, who have been largely ignored by the national media, the sports mags like Sports Illustrated. Until last year, there were a couple of covers. And also by ESPN and the networks, which televise baseball but don't show Pirates games. Might we see more games and more national exposure for the Pirates this year?
Well, nothing succeeds like success, and people love winners. They'll be around winners. Actually, I think they did the Pirates a favor by not paying attention to them during some of those lean years. But, Yeah, the more you win, the more you're exposed. And the national media really did come around, I think, in the second half of last year with some Sports Illustrated pieces and some network exposure. So they'll be on more.
Bob Dvorak is our sports guy. He is Pittsburgh Post-Gazette sports writer emeritus, and you can check out his video blog, Sports and That, in which he talks about Ralph Kiner, right?
Today? Absolutely, yep, yep. He was a gem. You're in a league by yourself when you're Ralph Kiner.
And you're in a league by yourself, Bob Dvorak. Thank you again for joining us, and thank you for listening to Essential Pittsburgh. You can go to our website, WESA.FM, to check out past segments or anything you might have missed on today's show. Happy opening day, everyone. I'm Paul Guggenheimer. We'll see you again tomorrow with another edition of Essential Pittsburgh.